Get soft if you wanna get soft with it.
Sometimes you feel you gotta love somebody, and that somebody is you. Sometimes we feel we need to touch somebody before we're through. So take my hand and spin me in and hang me in emotions, man. I'll tell you where I think we stand.
Let's get soft if you wanna get soft with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hey, welcome to the show.
Everybody's
welcome to
show.
All of the shows.
Big Swapcast today.
That's right. The Tully Show and Emotional Hangs, which I don't know if you guys have typed your name in anywhere. It wants to autocorrect to Emotional Hanks.
No. Oh, I get Emotional Hands.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Whenever I try and just write an email about the show, it always comes out Emotional Hands.
Mine sounds like a pretty decent alt-country act. Yours sounds more like 80s synth pop.
I like that. I like that.
Well, yeah. Kurt's Google is just used to him searching, what should I finger my pussy with?
Emotional Hands. It always just pops right up.
I'm just holding it for you on WordPress whenever you want to activate that account.
Good to be in the studio here, and you have your friend here.
Yes. Hi, Craig Williams.
I'm Craig.
Craig.
Good to be here. Good to meet you guys.
Yeah, you too, man.
Handsome fellas.
Thank you,
Craig. This is going to be a whole hour of friendship. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are really into to friendship. I wanted to ask you about that, and Kurt, I asked you about it a little bit when you were on my show a while back. You know by now that when you commit to a podcast, you have to really, really like the concept, because every concept is cool for one or two or three episodes. What is it about adult friendship that you guys felt like you would be comfortable talking about over and over in depth over the long haul?
I think what it was is the fact that, like, as adults, you know, like, once you're past 30, it's very rare to make a new friend and kind of have it stick. Like, you have a bunch of people who are like, yeah, I like that person, but I'm not really going to make a commitment to being a friend with them, you know? And then Joe and I just had this kind of thing where we hadn't really hung out when we lived in New York, and then we moved to L.A. We just kind of made an actual decision to become friends, which kind of felt like a real... It was like a weird thing to do.
So was it a conscious conversation where you have to make the commitment?
Well, I'd say that we didn't hang out a ton in New York, as Kurt said, but the few times we did, I feel like we had a nice bond. And it was one of those like, oh, I relate to this guy way more than I thought I would. And then he was one of the first people I ran into at L.A., in L.A. at Little Dom's in Los Feliz. John Hamm eats there.
Ryan Gosling, too.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling. But anyway, I ran into him there because somebody was like, you got to go to Little Dom's. It's like the play, you know. So I saw him there, and it was like, hey, dude, like, let's hang out now that we live near each other and don't know that many people. And it was one of the few times I sincerely meant it when I said it and followed through with it, and same with...
Yeah, and
Kurt, I guess.
And I think the name of the show came from, it was one night, it was a festival or something, I think it was Riot, and I was very drunk.
It was Riot Fest, yeah.
It was Riot Fest, I was very drunk, and apparently kept threatening to punch Joe, and then he would get scared, and then I would like hug him and be like, I'm never going to punch you, buddy. And I'm like, why do you think I'm going to hurt you? And he's like, you're a big man. Like, you're intimidating when you go to, like, fake punch me.
Yeah, all three of you are way bigger than me, by the way.
I feel cornered. Any of us as intimidating.
Relative to me, perhaps.
Kurt drunk is a little intimidating.
Really?
I can see that.
Very tall.
Rangy.
Yeah, it's very, like, yeah.
Is he red-faced?
It's a little red-faced.
It's very Scandinavian.
I was also... highly aware that he probably did not know what was happening at the time.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know his brain was. So I was like, I wasn't scared that he was going to actually hit me. I was scared that he was going to hit me by accident.
Right.
So I kept flinching. So anyway, sorry.
And then eventually I said...
You, when you were leaving, you hugged me and you go, I love you, buddy, so much. We have emotional hangs. And then he just walked out on that note. So then the next day I called him and...
I had no memory of this.
First thing he said, answering the phone, he picks it up, he goes, how worried do I need to be? And I was like, no, you were fine, dude, you're fine. It was funny. And I told him the story, and as soon as I got to that part, he goes, emotional hangs? And he started laughing. He goes, that's so crazy. I think that's a podcast. And then, like, 6 months later, we finally recorded one because we finally figured out, well, what would it be? Like, we just were like, that's a good title for something. But at that point, we weren't like, oh, it'll be about friendship. And that's kind of when we realized, like, oh, we're like becoming friends. And like, there's like a vulnerability there that adults don't show one another. And we could explore that in a humorous way, but a sincere way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it started.
I think a part of the challenge, and Craig and I have experienced this, is, I mean, it's so lame to even talk about it this way, but like when you feel like, I think I like this guy,
right.
Who's going to make the leap? I, if I'm not mistaken, so we met, Craig and I did, at a mutual friend's birthday party dinner. We were seated across from each
Korean
other.
Korean barbecue.
That's right. And we share a deep passion for 80s hair metal, specifically glam metal.
Sure.
To the extent that each Obviously. Of us were in bands that... Yours was a more direct glam metal band. We both wore leather pants. And he wrote a book
that
about
night,
it.
To the party.
And, yeah. And as he's leaving, I think I talked to my... She was my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, about like... What if he goes and I don't see him again? I think I should get his contact info, but how the fuck do you do that? Like, I know we get along really, really well. I know we want to go get a beer, but how do you tell an adult man that you've just met, hey, let's keep in touch?
Yeah.
It would actually be easier if I felt like we had a work contact, mm-hmm. you know, that we could use as a pretext for him, but we actually are in totally yeah. different fields.
It's tough to do. Dan St. Germain told me once, like when he moved here, shortly after I did, and we went to Jackknife Records in Atwater Village. And the guy that owns and operates that place is a cool guy, and he, you know, he knows music, and you can have good conversations with him when you go in and stuff. And Dan told me after we left the store, he told me this later, he goes, I almost went back and asked that guy if I could have his number to be friends. And he goes, but it was too sad, I couldn't do it. And I was like, if you did that, I would never talk to you probably ever again. I was like, that is so psychotic.
Yeah. Yeah.
but at the same time, I get it. Like, it's yeah. hard. You're in a new town. It's like, how do you meet somebody? Like, how do you become friends with somebody? You know, like, it's not often that you're sort of jammed into this birthday dinner scenario.
Right.
And then you also just happen to hit it off with the guy you're sitting across from. Mm-hmm.
And you get to that level of, hey, we both like 80s hair metal.
Yeah.
So you were in a band, well, exactly. too?
Did you act? You wrote a book about 80s hair metal?
I did. I wrote a book called...
What's it called?
It's called Mom, Have You Seen My Leather Pants?
Oh, wow.
It's now 10 years old. It just turned 10 years old.
Nice. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
That's available
I'd like
on Amazon,
to read
I believe.
It is still available on Amazon and, you know... Secondhand bookstores, probably.
Have you seen the Fall of Western Civilization Part 2?
Yes.
So is your book
yes.
in the vein of that?
It is in the vein of that. The spin okay. is that I was a very nerdy honors kid down in Orange County and decided that my ticket to being cool and fitting in was to grow my hair long and become an hair metal rock star.
Uh-huh.
And so we were really nerdy about how we approached this. It was me and my other 15-year-old honors student friends. And it was like scientific method about, you know, what's our hypothesis and how are we going to achieve this goal? And within a year, we were selling out shows at the Roxy and the Whiskey and the Troubadour. And this is like
Whoa,
1989,
holy
you know, a whole different era of yeah. the Sunset Strip than what it is now. And so it was like, you know, rock star by night, signing boobs and then having to show up for geometry class in the morning.
Like actually signing boobs?
Yes, actually signing boobs.
At like the Whiskey A Go-Go?
That's the first line of the book, is that when I was 16, I autographed breasts.
Oh, that's great. I want to read that book.
Yeah. I do too. That sounds great.
So I think we started talking about the book and it probably had just come out. And was I with Trish, right?
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
So I think that...
I went home and ordered it.
Okay, great.
So you guys have been buddies for 10 years now.
I guess so.
Yeah. Or nine.
Adult years are weird.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Like 2 years in high school feel about as long as
ten years
in your 30s.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, and see,
we should do something special for that anniversary.
Let's not make this
weird. I find the opposite of the years thing. I find that in relationships in adulthood... It's like dog years. It's a much more concentrated experience. You know, like when you date in adulthood, I think once you hit your late 30s, you know, you could date somebody for 6 months and have a pretty good handle on, like, I know who this person is. I know if this will work out for a long time or not. You know what I mean? Whereas in high school, you know, you could date somebody for 6 years and think, I need to marry this person, and be completely wrong, you know?
That's true. You certainly, well, you learn what little signals mean in a major way. You cut through the chaff, if that's a word, pretty quickly with when you meet anybody as an adult. Professionally, that's true.
Time does fly, though. I do agree with you.
Yeah. And we've both started families in the meantime. We've actually been on very similar trajectories, which I think a friend of mine made a really good observation one time, that if every time you hang out with your friend, you just talk about the old times, your friendship is essentially already dead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, it's bold. It's a bold statement, but I think maybe true.
Maybe it's somebody you see, like, you know, yeah, once a year. Like, I come from a small town in New Jersey, and if you go out to the bar the night before Thanksgiving, you'll just see everybody from high school. And
I love that night.
And you're happy to see everybody, but all you do is talk about high school. Those are not current friendships anymore. But, yeah, Craig and I have been going through a lot of the same things.
Yeah, we keep it fresh.
It's about so much more than leather pants now. Yeah.
Here's my question, though.
But it always comes back to hair metal.
How did you broaches it? Like, how did you become friends? Like, did you just, like, march right back into that birthday party and be like, I want to be your friend?
My memory is that you gave me your business card.
Oh, that was
slick. And then I emailed you.
Very coy.
And so did you feel the same way? First night, you're like, I like this dude.
I really like that guy. He knows more about hair metal than anybody I have ever met in my entire life. I need to get in touch with him. And my now wife was like, yeah, go for it. But there is, I think maybe having the wives there softened it a little bit.
Maybe.
And then I think that our first date, as it were, was that we brought the wives, or the girlfriends.
Did we?
I think so.
I don't remember.
And to make it less weird, so it's not just like one-on-one, we're now like dudes hanging out.
Well, but they weren't chaperones.
Like, you had lady chaperones.
Our ladies do get along with one another. It wasn't this weird thing of where we just dragged them along to, you know, stare at their phone and make, you know, give each other the evil eye.
Oh, God, they're going to talk about Motley Crue.
Well, we talked about Bang Tango for an hour and a half. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's great, though, when that happens. I met a guy, we're friends now, but my friend Matt, who is one of the hosts of a podcast called Monster Party, which, if you're in any way a horror sci-fi fan, you need to hear this podcast. It's tremendous. But, you know, he does it at his house with the three other hosts, and his house is ceiling, you know, of the attic to floor of the basement, covered in, like, memorabilia of horror movies. And stuff. And it's like, we just hit it off, like, immediately.
Yeah.
And I was just like, dude, we're going to be, like, friends, man. Like, you know, it's nice when that happens.
I think that's what it takes, right?
Yeah. When you have something so... Because it's one thing to have a common interest with somebody. It's another thing to have a mutual respect for that interest. You know what I mean? It's one thing to go, we both like this thing, but it's another thing to go, oh, we can both go real deep with this right now, you know?
But you know what? What's interesting is that I don't think you and I, other than music taste, have much in common with our tastes. Like, I don't give a shit about video games. I don't give a shit about horror movies.
Right.
And yet we can talk all the time.
Yeah, from the outside.
And whenever you talk about your
family, I don't give a shit.
You don't care about my family at all.
That's the
worst,
right?
Which I keep saying, like,
talks about his
you
kid.
Should care about my family. They're an extension of me. But
we had a couple small ones that were huge, though. And I remember the main one was you being in my old apartment. When I lived in Silver Lake, you being in that apartment when we first started doing this podcast. Well, first of all, our common interest was, I hate to say it, was alcohol. I was like, when I met Kurt,
that's
I was
very
like,
true.
Oh, this guy, like, he likes to fucking hang, man. And I was like, okay, cool. So, like, there was that sort of, like, we both fought in the war kind of nod to each other.
Which is something that I think if you've ever moved to... Are you both originally from the East Coast?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that's the thing, too. He's from Jersey. Yeah. I'm from Philly. Like, okay. It's like...
It feels very familiar.
Because the people drink different out here. Of course, there's alcoholics everywhere, but I can remember going to some industry event. Ice Cube was releasing an album, and I got an invite to it. So there was, like, free chicken and waffles, and there was free beer. And I mean, like, if Ice Cube is offering free beer, I'm drinking all the free beer I could possibly consume. And my I've only made two friends in Los Angeles in 12 years. My other friend was like, man, you're really putting them back. And I was like, what the fuck else would I be doing? Are you kidding me? Ice Cube gave us free beer. It's our mission to drink as much as we do this.
I would never say that to you.
No, I know you wouldn't.
Exactly. And that's, that was an immediate bond between Kurt and I. The other thing was comedy, and was just respecting each other's comedy because we're very different.
You are.
So I like that. But then also a big one was, I think it was the first time ever we recorded an episode of Emotional Hangs, which this was a long time ago because in the beginning we just did them as sporadic episodes on our different podcasts that we had. Mm-hmm. So we'd do a crossover app and then we'd both release that on our podcast and then we wouldn't do another one for 3 months or something. So anyway, you were looking at my CDs and you yanked out that J Church album.
Yeah. You're the only other person I know who likes J Church.
Yeah. Yeah. So J Church was a pretty seminal, is that the right word? Band for me when I was in college. Only a few people I've ever known. In fact, I don't know if I've ever met anybody that knows J Church aside from my old friend Matt, who got me into J Church.
Like, yeah,
you don't meet a lot of J Church fans.
No, you don't.
I don't know J Church at all.
So
they're like a pop punk band from San Francisco.
I think they're from the Bay and
the Bay Area. Yeah,
it's a sad story. The guy passed away, but I had all these weird run-ins with him in Austin, where I'd see a guy selling merch at a show at another band's table and I'd be like, you look like the J Church guy, and he'd be like, I am the J Church guy. Like, these are not like very, this is not a very recognizable band.
No.
So I ran into him a couple times, and so it was a band that was kind of close to my heart, and you pulled out and played excitedly one of the best J Church songs, Foreign Films, and I remember you being like, it's so fucking sad, listen to the lyrics. And I was like, man, I never thought of it that way. It is really fucking sad. You know, because they're a poppy band, but the lyrics are sad. That was huge. Like, so we might not have this, like, common, like, hey, I also like to buy Sega Genesis games thing, but...
he buys a lot.
Yeah.
I know he likes hip-hop cassettes as well.
I'm a huge... Well, I like hip-hop everything, okay. But I've got a lot. My hip-hop collection is pretty insane. But, like, that's my point, is, like, if you meet somebody... You can bond over the big thing, which is glam rock or hip hop, or I also love this thing that you love. But then there are those little things where it's like, you know, oh, you also know this obscure band that nobody else has ever talked to you about ever and has always skipped over when they looked at your collection. That's pretty big, you know? That's almost as big as us liking the same genre of something, is what I'm saying.
And here's also, too, like, when you guys, when your relationship, like, so you guys became friends and that, you know, you went out. What? When was the moment when you guys were, like, going to be like, oh, I really want to be friends with him? Like, I'm going to make a commitment to him.
Where you're like, this
when
is going to be a life longer.
I feel like...
A long time. I'm not sure I've made that commitment mentally just yet.
Yeah, I don't know there's never been a conscious commitment ceremony or anything like that. That's why I was interested to hear that.
Actually, probably, we kind of already did celebrate 10 years. They had at the nine-year point, SiriusXM had a hair metal festival that I had like a...
Really?
They got everybody to play, and it was down in Orange County. Who didn't play?
It was rad.
Yeah, give us a rundown, please.
Okay, so going from the headliners down, Vince Neil was ridiculously bad. We left. Brett Michaels
worried about Vince Neil's health at that show.
I saw him, not to sidetrack us at all, sure. But I saw Motley Crue. Me and Bill Burr saw Motley Crue open up for Aerosmith in Long Island years ago. Mm-hmm. And Bill had we had both befriended Joe Perry's stepson. So we got to go backstage and meet Aerosmith, which was really cool.
Yeah.
I remember Joey Kramer, we met him and he walked away. And as he was walking away, Burr pointed at his feet and he goes, those are the feet that played Walk This Way. Like, yeah, that's pretty crazy. But anyway, Motley Crue opened up and they were all great except Vince Neil. Like, Vince Neil was forgetting lyrics and like... He was all fat and shit.
On the way home, I was like, it didn't used to be like this. He was never great, but he used to be okay. And I pulled up, I'd bought a bootleg at Rainbow Rockatorium in Brick, New Jersey, of the Crue touring in 1990, I want to say in Kansas City. And I pulled up the video because I knew it would be on YouTube, and he was fucking awful. He was just just as bad. But like,
sorry,
that's a shame.
I'll sing half the line, and you know, he came out in the first chorus of the first song. He's like, "Let me hear you," and it's like, "No, dude, you do. How about you do a couple choruses before we start helping you out?" So they played. Brett Michaels played. Tesla played. But the thing is, Craig and I were more excited about the bands that were playing at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Like,
sure.
Enough's Enough. I was very excited about.
They were great.
About Vane.
Yeah,
it was very important to me that we make it there in time for Vane, which we did. Thank God. We were on the side of the stage for Pretty Boy Floyd. who are, if you are really into this stuff, it's a super guilty pleasure.
We're out of, you're out of my league at this point. We're now in the back room of the Army surplus store and falling down. Where I'm like, we're not the same.
Yeah.
But for us, this was like an incredibly, bonding experience.
Yeah.
And I think Tully put it really well, that these are our comic books.
Yeah.
And that we're able to dig into these things in a way that most human beings aren't able to.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. We'd go to the show and then we'd go grab a beer in the at the craft services, whatever you call it, at a concert, and we'd like see the singer of the band and be like, "Hey man, great set.
Kicks was fantastic.
It was magic." It was one of the coolest nights I've ever had, and it wouldn't have been as fun if I hadn't had a friend there who also appreciated how rad it was.
No, it's pretty amazing when you know, my friend James Pinkstone, who lives in Atlanta, who I spend, you know, some holiday, not Christmas, but I'll spend, you know, Thanksgiving with him and his wife sometimes. But, you know, he's been my friend since high school. And I think the thing that keeps our friendship alive is, and not just revisiting the past, is because we only get to hang out twice a year or something. It's mutual interests that keep growing, you know, and if he lived here and we hung out together every day, it would grow in a different way. The way, you know, I think our friendship grows, you know? But, like, us having these insane mutual interests between horror movies and bands that we both love and certain rappers and being collectors and mediaphiles and things, you know, he's a guy that I could say, hey, man, this concert's happening. And, you know, we saw Fu Manchu one time when he was visiting at the, what's the West Hollywood venue? The cool rock venue?
The Fonda?
No.
Troubadour.
Troubadour. And, you know, it was like, he was like literally one of the, like probably the only person in my life at the time that I could have thought of to be like, I can't believe this is happening while you're visiting me. Like, let's go. So that's great, man. Like that you guys got to experience that together. And it's really special when you know that that's the only person that can.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that.
I would have been so much drunker by myself because I would just been wandering around me like, there's LA Guns, there's Bang Tango, just nobody to talk to. I just would have.
Yeah. Is Wasp a hair metal band?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. I'd say they're you know, almost ground zero.
They're ground zero.
I mean, I think Van Halen is ground zero, but Wasp was right there.
Right. I think what we really got into is this stuff that most people who were around for the Wasps of the world would say this is when the whole genre curdled. And became this awful, like, bastardization of a bastardization that's really, like, thinly disguised pop calling itself rock and roll.
Like Poison?
Yeah. I'm not a huge Poison fan, but sure. Yeah. I think where a lot of the purists got off is exactly where Craig and I got on.
That's funny. Did Rat get in under the wire, or is Rat considered a later?
I think they're legit. I think they're totally legit.
Yeah, they're credible. I think if you had an album out before 86, which is when Poison released their debut, then you're kind of old school in regards to this.
There's an awesome horror movie starring Richard Mull of Night Court fame.
Bull, yeah.
Yeah, called The Dungeon Master.
Oh.
Fucking great flick. So fun. Crazy 80s. It's so goofy. It's great. But Rat is in it.
Really?
One of the fantasy realms that he sends his the two victims who are trying to escape his dungeon to is a rat concert. Yeah, and it's like, I forget what happens, that he basically sends this couple, he just keeps sending them into these scenarios where the husband has to save the wife from peril. And I forget what happens at the rat concert, but that's like the present day scenario.
I'll tell you what happens. Rock and roll.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
She's going to rock to death, man.
These guys are animals. They bang heads.
Yeah.
The 80s were really the last innocent time in the culture where something like a rock band could be seen as legitimately dangerous.
They're not dangerous.
Right?
I can't remember why they're, but you are right. Yeah. But
they are not
movie,
dangerous.
They're not dangerous in the movie. It's just something happens at the concert.
Right.
They wanted to just get a band in there for the teeny boppers.
But the connotation, the connotation as a child of the 80s was that music was evil, that like Satan was involved in some way.
Probably, yeah.
That's right. Stuff there's backwards, if you listen to it backwards, all that stuff.
That happened in front of Congress. Like, can you imagine? Well, unfortunately, nowadays I could imagine it all over again in a way that I would not have been able to imagine it for about a 30-year period of time. But legitimate, serious adults got up and were like, no, satanic messages need to, and Congress is like, you might have a point, lady.
Isn't that so insane?
That is so insane.
And it was like, for the guys doing it, like, that Satan stuff was very funny. It was like a goof.
Absolutely.
And it's like, look at this. Like, the Senate is upset.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. I love that so much.
I used to have a bit, and it never worked the way I wanted it to, but I would be like, this is how... And if you ever think our country is intelligent, like, just remember this. This is how stupid our country is. There was a time when grown people actually thought Ozzy Osbourne was the devil.
That's right.
Like, the guy with the reality show, the guy whose daughter does, like, the red carpet bullshit with Joan Rivers. Like, they thought he was literally the devil. It's so fucking embarrassing when you look back on all of it.
And that there was backwards messages in there where he was convincing people to commit suicide.
Yeah.
Right.
And that a backward message could actually convince anybody. Like, if
your subconscious works so well that it can interpret backwards messages.
And who had tapped into it? Ozzy.
Right.
The smartest man in the world.
Right. Like, even if you accept,
after he did snorted a line of ants, he came up with this subconscious programming method.
I've got a great idea.
Even if you accept the premises that he was in league with Satan, that Satan was a real person you could be in league with, and that they had decided to corrupt the youth of the world, even if all those things were true, backwards messages
in and of themselves
would be an insane way to try to pull that off.
It's so nuts. It's so nuts. But that whole time, that I remember that's what made John Denver like cool again, was because John Denver testified on behalf of the artists in front of Congress. Like,
really?
One of the big testimonies were Denver and Zappa, which I thought was very cool because Zappa, with the stickering of the albums and everything and all that shit. And I thought that was cool because... especially with Zap, like Denver being like sort of a nerdy guy speaking out, I thought was cool. And then I also thought it was cool that Zappa did it because I don't think he was a fan of a lot of the music that was getting hit. You know, he thought a lot of it was like manufactured, but he still got up there and stuck up for them. So,
right. If you don't have absolute free speech, then you don't have free speech.
Yeah. It's, you know, so, but anyway. Have you guys, here's a question we always ask on our show. Have you guys ever had a difference, you know, a fight? Was there ever a point where you go, oh, this is real because we're having our first fight?
I don't think we've ever had a first fight.
No, I don't know that we would.
You would? You think that that's impossible?
Just about.
Wow.
I mean, I guess if there was some, you know, it would have to be like a wrong against one another's family or something like that.
Yeah, but why the fuck would we ever do that?
I mean, I would...
We kind of keep it light.
Just to be a dick, I would just...
We kind of keep it light. Sorry, I mean, okay, we'll reframe the question.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a moment, maybe, that you never mentioned to the other person? This is a segment that we call air it out.
There's something I feel bad about that I could...
Great.
That
this I is a time to great. Air it out. That this is a time, there's no judgments. You can say whatever you want.
No.
Bring something up.
So,
well, there's no judgment until the episode's over, and then we all have to live with it for the rest of our lives.
We recently had plans to go to a show at the Viper Room.
Mm-hmm.
What was the show?
It was a Blackboard Jungle annual reunion show.
Is that a hair metal band?
They are.
Okay, and so this is an important show.
It's a very important show. Again, you know, judging from the Hair Nation Festival and how significant that was to our relationship, Swingin' Thing was opening for them.
The last generation of bands who showed up being like, oh, all I need to do is write 10 songs, you know, dye my hair and I will get, and I will be famous on MTV six months from now. And this is exactly when the game of musical chairs ended. These were the last reigning bands on the strip.
Right.
Okay.
Nirvana is coming over the mountain at this point.
Nirvana has come over the mountain.
Okay. Oh, it's already like early 90s when these guys came on the scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So Tully...
It kept going for a while, Kurt.
Okay.
Tully invited me, and I enthusiastically said yes. So enthusiastically that we even convinced our wives to come, because my wife was a huge Blackboard Jungle fan. And I'm a Swingin' Thing.
You really found a lot of people.
That's what
people.
It takes.
That's amazing.
What it takes.
Blackboard Jungle, I've never even heard of this band.
Well, but he and his wife grew up in Southern California, so they were kind of big in the area.
Kind of.
My wife, I think I asked her who her favorite music artists were when we met, and she said, Frank Sinatra, Bjork, and Aretha Franklin. And she was like, well, if Trish is going, I guess I'll go too.
Right.
Oh, shit.
So there's capital. There's investment here. There's there's...
The wives have committed.
Relationship capital. You have to get a babysitter. A lot of things are happening. And I think about 4 p.m., our babysitter texted us and said that she had got into a car accident and that her whoever was in the car with her broke her leg and that they were in the emergency room and they weren't going to be able to make it. So we started frantically going through the Rolodex of babysitters. Nobody could do it, and I had to flake on the show. I couldn't make it, and I feel terrible about that.
Did you go with your wife, Mike?
We had an awesome time.
Oh, yeah. Great.
We really had fun, but okay, I hadn't thought of that because I don't have any like real lingering resentment over it, but I definitely judged you for not, I understood why the two of you couldn't come anymore, but like your wife wanted to go, but obviously this is like your thing, your swinging thing,
that's right.
And we didn't understand why you couldn't just be like, hey, hun, you got to stay home with the kids. I need to go to the show. It is a once per year reunion, you know, I don't know why you didn't come.
And I could have and should have done that. So I apologize.
Yeah, you ought to.
Oh, nice. That's great.
So I apologize.
That's a really good air it out.
For not
that is a good air it out.
Yeah.
You don't need to apologize. It would have been more fun if you had been there. But we
and your wife would have been totally cool. Like,
I think she would have. You know, we had, it was like a date night scenario. So I wasn't totally comfortable with making her put both kids to bed and me going. And she would have been cool with it.
I understand also why you stayed home.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's cool that you could have gone. I get what you're saying. I also get why you were like, yeah, maybe I don't want to press my luck. Like, there's a lot of disappointment in the air right now. And maybe it's pretty shitty if I'm like, all right, well, I guess you have fun. And,
yeah.
You know, like, I get that.
But she would have been okay with it, ultimately.
Even still, you probably gained way more points for, like, you know.
Did you?
Like, you know.
Do you feel like you got?
I don't know if I gained more points necessarily.
Do points work? I feel like in a male female relationship, we think points work.
Right, that's true.
And they do it. They have no points.
There's no points.
My wife has no points. I'm just like, give me points for that. She's like, there are no points. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And sure. I'm like, come on. Yeah. I should get credit for this.
Yeah.
Sure.
My wife, I just got major points from me one time, and it was when I decided to marry her, basically.
Childbirth was pretty.
Okay, yeah. Shout out to my wife for delivering my child as well. But I was.
Are we always in the negative points because of childbirth?
Yes. Fuck yes.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, she wanted that baby too.
She bought her ticket.
Real quick, I don't want to change the subject, but I was in Las Vegas and I was at my friend's bachelor party, and my wife knew full well she's hung out and partied herself what we were up to there, and I missed my flight back, and she knew full well how that happened. And I mean, I was literally standing in a pool with a drink being like, starting to cut it close now, really ought to go to the airport now, and I missed it. And then I was gonna my phone died, and I ended up with a dying phone, and all weekend long we just kept going, as long as you have your wallet, your phone charger, nothing can go wrong. And I realized I'd lost my phone charger, and I'm in this like downtown old school Las Vegas, a casino that was having an issue with a septic system, so a room that literally smelled like,
oh my god,
feces, bottoming out from a weekend of, you can imagine what. And she's just like, I'm just going to get in a car and come get you. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. I'm just going to rent a car and I'll drive home. And this was like the end of the world. And I took a taxi to the airport to pick up my rental car. And as my phone was dying, I was literally writing her, because I didn't know her phone number, because who knows anybody's phone number. I was writing her phone number down on a piece of paper so I could call her from the road somewhere. And just before my phone died, she called me and said, you're on a plane in a half an hour. Get the fuck over to blah, blah, blah terminal. And I got on the flight. And when I got home, the reason why she wanted me home so bad is because she had like prepared a meal and made like a menu that she'd printed out and everything.
You dick.
Jesus Christ.
And I was just like, okay, we are fucking, I mean, I didn't say it that night, but I was like, this actually makes it really easy for me. Cause you never really know. When do you know you got married? And I'm like, okay, we're getting married.
Oh, this was before you were married.
This is before we were engaged.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe you can get credit or lose credit before you're married.
Right.
Once it's an exhibition game from there on out, once you actually exchange the vows. So you guys are in two different places in your lives, which is a challenge to relationships.
It is. It's a challenge to a friendship. But I'm happy that we have a podcast that always gets us together once a week at least.
I agree. And I haven't felt any weird, you know.
But also in some way our lives are very similar. Like last night I was up with a crying baby for 2 hours and Joe was on a date with a woman who was like a child. So it was very similar, really.
I find you know, we do see each other usually once a week for the podcast. We start doing some live shows on the road for the podcast soon. So that'll be other, you know, adventures.
I know this, it'll be really interesting. Our first one is in Vegas, but then after that, we're going to be doing a tour through Texas.
Yeah.
Austin, Houston, and Dallas.
Yeah.
In November. But that'll be interesting because we're going to be like driving from town to town. That will be the most time we've ever spent with just you and I, and also like traveling and on tour where we're going to be hungover and kind of like, it'll be interesting. We'll learn a lot about each other.
We will. And I'm not, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm not concerned at all because I know that you and I are similar in the sense of we're both fairly punctual.
Mm-hmm.
We're both pretty courteous. Like, it's not, I don't think there's any tension that will build, you know, because of that. But I don't know. It's weird. I feel like I guess it's because of the show, but I feel like I still see you a good amount. But I also kind of like, you know, as I get older, I just turned 40. I kind of like having a close friend now that has a family, so he can't go out every night. I need more friends that can't go out every night.
You know? you need more daytime friends?
Yeah. Well, I just need, you know, it's like, that's good for me. I'm a bachelor, and we have my favorite bars on planet Earth within walking distance of our houses or my apartment, his house, where we live. It's like, yeah, it's good for me to have friends that have other shit to do, because then that makes me go do other shit, you know?
What happens if you guys go out on the road and... Because road trips, you know, a lot of friendships are damaged or destroyed.
Yeah.
You really like a person, but maybe not in a 24/7 kind
right.
of way. You guys are now professional friends.
Uh-huh.
What happens if one of you guys falls out of friend love with the other?
Are you kidding me? It would be like the best thing for the podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Because that would be fascinating.
Yeah.
We would talk about it, and we would like get mad at each other on air.
Yeah, yeah. I thought... It's almost a shame if that doesn't happen.
But where do you go from? But where do you go from there when it's like, hey, it's a show about adult
it's
friendship.
Counseling.
I still really like him. He's completely over me.
It becomes
week seven of that.
You see if you can. I don't think that would happen. But like you see if you can work through it. That's the whole point of the show. Is it's not just we happen to be adults and we became friends. It's the exploration of a friendship at a certain age in the fashion that you did it as a child. So it's like when you're a kid, you get blindly angry at a friend. You know, you say to your friends as a kid, never talk to me ever again. I hate you. I'm done with that guy. Whatever, you know, that you have these extreme emotional swings as a friend, but you always come back because you always come to your senses and go, okay. Whereas adults never hit any extreme and just keep everything this sort of moderate. I get really fucking pissed when, or annoyed, I should say, when, and many of my grown-up friends, I only have grown-up friends. I don't have any child friends.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, yeah. But
I mean, with the amount that you like video games and stuff, I'm surprised you don't have, like, children friends.
They're too young to play the games I like.
Oh, yeah.
They're all from the
80s. They probably chat online while they play.
Yeah. But like a lot of my friends are very loose with the terms love and hate, and that annoys me. To me, that's childish.
Oh boy, here comes old man Joe.
But you know,
I hate it when you use the word love and hate.
Well, because here's why.
Give
this
it to me.
This is one of my things.
Give it.
It's like I'll hear somebody go, "Oh my God, I absolutely love them," and it's like. You don't love them.
Right.
You had a fun conversation with them.
Once.
And you're feeling elated from that conversation. And then, sure enough, 2 weeks later, oh, you know who's a prick? It's like, yeah, dumbass. You're the one that was like, I love them. Now I hate them. It's like... Just fucking like you
this
know.
This is actually a hatred for L.A.
No, this is a problem with hyperbole.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah. But I think hyperbole affects friendship. I really do. In these years, when you're a kid, you don't know better. Mm-hmm. So you let yourself go to crazy extremes. And when you're a kid, you really do mean it. Like when you're a kid, it's like, dude, I stood up to the bully by the creek
for you last week and got my fucking lip split open, and now you're not going to invite me to your sleepover where it's the comic book swap or whatever the fuck it is. You know what I mean? Like, that shit cuts pretty goddamn deep because you go so much farther out of your way when you're a kid to put your vulnerability on the line.
And I think that that's really what our podcast, we try and focus on a lot, is this idea of vulnerability. Is that, like, that's the way that you keep a friendship, like, for real, is, like, you have to be vulnerable with each other. And it's, I think, really one of the most difficult things to do.
It's interesting that you say that, because I heard you both refer to yourselves on your show as you're Catholics, right? You're raised in the Catholic.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. Obviously, yeah. Who the fuck practices. You know.
Exactly.
Craig, you are a WASP?
Yeah, I'm nothing.
Because
in the eyes of the Lord, I am nothing.
Going to hell.
Because I do feel like in certain ways, I am still fundamentally like an Irish Catholic kid, to where everybody is vulnerable, but it's just how much do you let people see that vulnerability, and how much are you yourself able to access your own vulnerability? And like I said, sure. I joked earlier, but I was only half joking about Craig and I keep our friendship light. We're never going to have a conversation about the state of our friendship, because I've pretty much never had that conversation with any friend I've ever had, and I don't have it very often, even with like girlfriends or with my wife.
Yeah. No, and I think that Catholic shit, you know, my mom got sick a year ago, and I spent a lot of time with her in Jersey. And it wasn't until like after she passed that I realized, like, after I couldn't ask her any more questions, how much I never fucking found out. Because it's just that Catholic thing where you just simply don't talk about like your feelings or how it's going. And it's insane, because we kind of really got serious about this podcast and this idea of vulnerability after my mom died. And I always think about it, like, if I had been doing this with Joe, where we are so open with each other, before my mom died, I think I would have had a different, like, ending relationship with her, because I would have asked all those, like, questions that feel like they're impossible to ask, but then once you ask them, it's like, oh, it's no big deal.
It's just words.
It's just fucking words, and they're just talking about feelings.
It's
true.
Emotional health is probably a good thing.
It's fair.
But like, that Catholic thing is, like, it's huge.
It's affected me greatly with the podcast. It's affected me greatly with the way I deal with other people.
Yeah.
You know, in that way, you know, I just split up with my manager after many years and many achievements and whatever, but it just wasn't working anymore. And, you know, I really think a lot has to do with our podcast, that I was able to just be like, look, like, I love you. I just don't know if this is working out anymore. You know?
Yeah.
I mean?
And also for those listening who, like, a manager comedian relationship is not like a, it's a relationship. It feels like a marriage almost, you know, because they're not just like somebody who gets you a job. They're like a person who cares about you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, so I think the podcast has affected both of us very positively.
And when you were doing that, you came to me and we kind of like talked it through multiple times.
Yes. Kurt has become the guy in my life that I call, like, I'm like, this happened, I need to talk to you. I'm not crazy, right? Like, am I reacting poorly to this? Like,
well, you guys have that chemistry now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Joe that for you?
Yeah, 100%. The other day I was, he called, I was being a little bitch on email.
You weren't being a little bitch.
I kind of was.
You were being,
I was stressing
little,
out.
You're being a little short. And
I was being short.
You weren't doing anything wrong, and I just thought, okay.
But then he just called me. He called me out of the blue, just being like, hey, is everything okay? And it, like, pissed me off, because I was like, what, is it just I'm fucking short on him? Yeah, I'm stressed, you know? And then I thought about it for, like, 2 hours, and then called him back, and I was like, actually, I'm pretty depressed. And I didn't even realize it until I thought about it, and you're right.
But, I mean, that was a great example of what we're talking about and how this podcast has helped and affected us. I think there was a time where both of us would have handled that with me being like, hey, dude, what the fuck, man? And don't, you know, and it wasn't that. It was me just being like, dude, it's all good. Like, you weren't inappropriate. I get the feeling you might be having a bad day. So just tell me if you are. I just want to help you out if you are. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, like, and the fact that the two of us, he even said, oh, well, you got annoyed, but you didn't show that. It was like, it was a very healthy exchange.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's why I hate hyperbole, because I think when you use it, you don't get to a place with somebody
that's
where
truthful.
You can actually, have real emotions with them and like real feelings. And I think That's the problem with adult friendships. One version of it is complete hyperbole bullshit, and the other version is everybody's at an arm's length. And it's like, well, I guess, you know, I hope your spouse doesn't die, and you don't die alone. You're not going to have any friends.
I know, and there's... I read a there's like a New York Times article that came out maybe like 6 months ago that said for men, for middle-aged men, not having other male friends was the like worse for you than smoking as far as mortality rates go.
Yeah,
because that's what happens. Like men just stop having friends. They have like a wife or something, and then they just stop having friends, and then like their wife dies or something like that, and then they're just alone until they die.
So
and
you
that's
should start
very
smoking.
Common.
That's what you're saying, right?
I just want to say like I should take smoking back up because now that I've got this friend, I can probably have a few smokes.
You can even
you know?
It out. It'll cancel each other out.
Yeah, I should. Make friends who are smokers and smoke with them. Then it sounds like I can't lose.
Well, you know, I think, you know, supporting proof of that theory or whatever, or some evidence at least, is, you know, we talk about this all the time. Excuse me, the bulk of our audience, or at least the ones that speak to us, are women. You know, so you think two straight white guys doing a podcast about straight white guy issues. You don't think the biggest audience you'd pull in from that are women.
And well, you're letting them behind enemy lines.
Well, yeah.
A little bit.
And we're also not pandering. Like, it's not, you know, we're honest and we act like dudes a lot of the time. But, like, I hear the most from women, you know. And I think it's because, like guys just don't, I don't know. They don't show it. They don't, it's odd to me. I don't know why. I don't know. I just never... There was never a time in my life where I thought, I don't want to make new friends anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to try anymore.
Yeah.
Quite the contrary. I'm disappointed I haven't made a new friend since, I don't think, since I became friends with Craig. And
Well, you're going to die, dude.
Bring me my cigarettes.
But I also think when we get together, we talk about real shit. It's not like we just get together and talk about... baseball or whatever.
Usually starts with like sports.
Sure.
And then it moves into
like,
family stuff. And then when we get kind of...
I have erectile dysfunction.
Kind of drunk, then we start talking about Bang Tango again.
But I think it's interesting that in addition to the hair metal, we've also gone through a lot of the same things at the same time. So we got married relatively at the same time. Having kids, Gray's a year older than Max.
Right.
So I can always check in and say, you know, what are you going through right now? What do I have to look forward to? And how do I get through this period?
Joe asked me when I proposed doing this as a swapcast. He said, well, how tight, like, are you guys? And I said, Craig is on the very short list of people I would call if I got a DUI.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the only people that I will talk disparagingly about my wife to.
Yeah,
right.
And if that's good.
And if that's not adult friendship, I don't know what is.
Well, I remember you those were your two criteria. And I was like, dude, that's, how much closer could you be?
Right.
Like, that's really close.
Because I'll circle the wagons on my wife all day. But, you know, and I think you probably feel the same way.
Sure.
But you have a couple of drinks. And you're like, man, you know, why do they do that? You know, I love my wife, but why do they do that one thing, you know?
Sure.
100%.
Why is she so angry that I'm hanging out with hip-hop stars in Miami? Get over it.
With unlimited beer.
Yeah.
Get over it.
He is, by the way, as a hip-hop fan. I don't know if you can talk about that, Craig.
I'm writing, adapting Luther Campbell's autobiography for, I guess.
A movie?
For a movie, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Is I've never read it. I assume it's insane.
It's insane. Yeah, it's completely insane.
Yeah.
It's like Goodfellas, but... with hip hop.
Is it mostly in Miami?
Mostly, yeah. Liberty City. Yeah.
I was very sad when Fresh Kid Ice died.
Because
Two Live Crew certainly, you know, it's certainly an archaic, the perspective they take with their music is certainly archaic and outdated. And, you know, it's, if it's not, well, you know, it's all sex stuff. And I would say that a lot of the time it does get a bit misogynist, you know, a bit.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
I think you're missing the layers to the fuck shop.
Yeah. That being said, it was sort of music of another time. And, it was, I was bummed when he died because I felt like that was a huge, huge free speech thing.
Yeah.
I remember David Bowie defending those guys. Mm-hmm. Like, that was an insane free speech.
Yeah, and they were provocateurs.
Thing. Yeah.
That too. Yeah. What Satanism was to Ozzy, sexism was to these guys. Yeah. You know, they were trying to push the envelope.
I remember my friend, who's a huge metalhead, said to me once, he was like, you know, man, he's like, he basically was just like, when enough people say you're the devil, you just start saying, yeah, fuck you, I'm the devil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like the Pryor thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they said Pryor's approach was not, he steered into the stereotype. Like, mm-hmm. okay, you're going to treat me like this? Well, then I'm going to fucking act like it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he was so brilliant. You know, yeah. So I also feel that they in some way fell into that category. But I can't imagine what his autobiography is like.
It's worth reading,
Jesus
for sure.
I didn't even know he had one.
Yeah.
What's it called?
The Book of Luke.
Yes.
That's great.
The film is still to be. I want to call the film "Hey, We Want Some Pussy," but I'm not sure what we can get away with.
Did you read the David Lee Roth autobiography?
No, I haven't read that one.
It's pretty good.
A lot of fun.
He really minimizes. Well, of course, he minimizes the role that Eddie Van Halen played in the success of Van Halen, but he also minimizes the role that being in Van Halen has played in his professional life.
That's amazing. Like that wasn't the biggest thing. The only reason we know his name.
No, it's going crazy. Crazy from the Heat. That's what everybody knows.
The book's called Crazy from the Heat.
Yeah,
sure it is.
Yeah, and. It's got my favorite story of the road I've ever heard, ever in it. He talks about doing a Van Halen show, and then after the show, at the after party, meeting two strippers that had just gotten off of work, and they both want to fuck him, so he goes up to his room with these two strippers to have a three-way, and he talks about how they had these like massive wads of ones on them, because they just got off work. And he said they threw him on the bed, and the bed was just a pile of money, and they all fucked on the pile of money. And I was like, that's the best thing I've ever ever heard. That's why you get into a band in the 80s.
Right.
Like, I would have retired the next day.
Right.
Like, we're done.
Yeah. May that happen for the two of you when you take emotional hangs out on the road. For now, we have to...
I jerked off on a pile of quarters last night.
Kirk watched.
It still makes me uncomfortable talking about adult male friendship head on. Like, I feel like at this point in the conversation,
you don't feel any better about it.
Like, if we had this kind of conversation when I was a kid with like other, me too. When I was like 11 or 12, at the end, somebody would have been like, "You want to watch me jerk off?"
Well, I'll say this really quick. I'll say this really quick because I know we got to go. I don't think it all has to be expressed in the way that Kurt and I express it, or these two people express it, or whatever. And I this is a takeaway that I got. I remember watching a documentary about Death Row Records once, and them talking about the relationship between Daz and Corrupt from the Dog Pound. And I don't think that those two guys sit around and talk vulnerably to one another a lot. But the way they described their relationship, I was like, that's so fucking cool that those guys are that close. Like, you know, so, and I was like, and they probably express it in very different ways than I do, but that's cool. Those guys are like lifelong friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think people just, it doesn't matter. As long as you feel it, it doesn't have to be said
mm-hmm.
in exact words.
Yeah.
You know?
And also, just having thought about it for this hour, I'm going to say... I bet you it'll affect the friendship.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I choose to not deal with that.
Yeah, I see. He immediately looked down to paper.
We're moving on. That's an interesting thought, Kurt, but we've got to wrap this up.
He's not going to say that he loves me. I thought that's how this was going to end.
That's definitely not going to happen. Everybody check out the Emotional Hangs podcast, the Tully Show podcast, at Kurt Braunohler, at Joe DeRosa Comedy, at Tully Craig. What do you have, like a Facebook?
I got Facebook. I got a Twitter handle. I just don't use it at all. Don't worry about it.
Well, cool, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.